Hey Trailblazers, this is Jason, your host of the Trailblazing Texas podcast. Before we jump into our latest episode, I've got some incredible news for you. Are you gearing up for your next big hike or backpacking trip? Well, we at Trailblazing Texas podcast have partnered up with Trekker Joe's, the ultimate Texas outfitter, to bring you something I feel absolutely special. Listeners, you of the Trailblazing Texas podcast can now get a one-time 15% off their gear purchases at Trekker Joe's. That's right. Whether you're a first-time customer at Trekker Joe's or a repeat customer like me, you can save big and hit the trails well-prepared. So upon checkout, use code TTP15 to claim your 15% discount and in the process support an amazing local Texas business. So happy trails, and don't forget to tell your hiking buddies. Now on with the episode. Welcome to the Trailblazing Texas podcast, where we embark on a journey through our diverse Texas landscapes and breathtaking trails while always engaging with our amazing Texas hiking community. So settle in, tighten up those bootlaces, and get ready for the thrilling tales awaiting for you on this episode. All right, so we wake up on day one. We are ready to rock. We have everything packed up. Our backpacks are already packed. Water's already ready to go. It's stored. We're ready. So we both drive our cars to McKittrick Canyon Trailhead. We get there right when the gate opens. It's 8 o'clock in the morning, and we wait for Sam. He arrives perfectly on time, about 8:30. And then we leave our cars, get our backpacks, and we are off. So he takes us the 30, 35 minutes up to where we were just at. And we drive down the road. We get to Slaughter Canyon, and we start hiking. Sam hiked probably, maybe about a half a mile with us.
I think it was about a mile.
About a mile. And then, we said our goodbyes, and we kept going. Yep. And so the plan for day one was right under 16 miles, and it was up through Slaughter Canyon to a campsite. And Todd, take us away with day one.
Well, the first problem we ran into, or the first problem I ran into, is we got to the trailhead and I realized I left my trekking poles in the van. Okay, no big deal. I'm going to be back at the van in 2 days. I'll be okay. And I was. I had never hiked all of the Slaughter Canyon Trail before. I knew that it had changed a bit after the flooding they had a few years ago. But the first 3 miles, you're crisscrossing back and forth across a dry wash. There were nice big cairns to follow. There's no issue with getting lost. When the trail's not in the wash, it was a pretty well-beaten path, easy to follow. Then at the three-mile mark, you're down in a wash in some shade, and you're looking up at the hill you're about to climb or the mountain you're about to climb. And those last two and a half miles up to the GRT, they put the whooping on me.
And me.
Well, Jason says that, but every time I would stop, he was well ahead of me because he's a beast.
No.
But yeah, those last 2.5 miles were pretty tough. I know around mile four, I'm beat down. Every time I stop, I sit down because my heart rate will go from 170 down to, 80 just like that as soon as I sit down. So I'm sitting down taking a break and I'm just shaking my head. Oh my God, what have I got myself into? I know Jason and I have never hiked to this extent before. He's probably over there looking at me going, why did I bring this guy with me? But those first few miles after the quote unquote easy part were pretty tough.
Yeah, it's weird. So when you hit Slaughter, it's, you could probably relate it to kind of like hiking Devil's Hall at the beginning. You know, you're crossing a wash, or maybe even a little bit of McKittrick, crossing washes, coming back and forth. Very beautiful. It's a lot what you would expect getting in the backcountry of the Quads, canyons, just absolutely beautiful. And what got, so, you know, again, I looked at the trail profile. I saw what we were going to be doing. I giggled about it. Like, I wasn't worried. When you hit Slaughter, there's a little hill that you go up and you can't really see above it. And you think, okay, well, it appears that we would climb this little hill and then maybe it tops out and then gradually gets to like another kind of plateau. And then we're hitting the GRT. No, you go up this little hill that's horribly steep. You get to the top and that's just the warm up. So I went all out thinking that, oh yeah, you know, I should have been looking at the trail profile to where we were on the trail as it relates to the incline. But yeah, I that first part, I blasted up there, got to the top, and then I saw what we still had to do. And I was ahead of Todd only because whenever I was crying, seeing what we still had to do, I didn't want him to see that I was crying. So it was tough. It was fun. Absolutely. There's no shade. There was a couple of spots where the sun was kind of hitting some rocks where it, you know, it kind of gave us a little bit of shade and a little cool area.
And the trail was pretty well defined as well.
Oh, absolutely. You from Slaughter Canyon to the GRT, you can't get lost. Once we topped out at Slaughter Canyon, it was really exciting to me to meet up to the GRT. You know, I love old things out in the backcountry of Gomo. This was all a new experience to me. There was old signs. There was, you know, kind of signs that had fallen down. So it kept me going, and it really, you know, the anticipation of what I was going to run into next kind of fueled me to keep going and kind of hid the pain that I was dealing with. And it was pretty shocking once we hit the GRT, how, and I would say towards the middle, or maybe not the middle, but like maybe the first half mile of the GRT that we ran, you know, that we intersected, there's no GRT.
Oh no.
Now later on there, you know, you have that double track road that we walked and stuff that you could really navigate and see where you're going. But that first part, you know, we definitely had to check the maps and check where, you know, where we were on our phones to make sure that we were staying. We knew the direction, but to make sure that we were on trail.
Yeah, I would advise anyone who is going to do this trail or any part of the GRT within Carlsbad Caverns National Park, have a GPS, have a track on your phone, have something you can verify that you're on trail. Because I've done that section, you know, at least four or five times. And there were a couple of times we got off trail. It was only maybe 100, you know, maybe 200 feet. But it was like, oh, this feels good. We're, you know, this is clear. We're walking down the trail. Well, no, we're walking down a game trail. And, okay, this doesn't feel right. We're going down. We should be going up. So pull out. Oh, yeah, sure enough, we're off trail. So that would be something I would highly recommend anybody do. Make sure you have a track of the trail.
And what I started to notice, and I've never noticed it before, but even starting with day one, we were completing miles at a pace that, like, I never have been on a hiking trip before where I'm like, geez, we haven't hit a mile yet. Or, man, we haven't hit 2 miles yet. Or, we still haven't hit the third mile yet. And that was something that was I was laughing about, but like, especially on day two and day three, like, I was like, I just couldn't comprehend why I wasn't clicking miles. Like what I would used to, if I was in the quads, you know, going up Tejas or Bear Canyon. And I wasn't taking, usually I would say, okay, it's because I'm taking a lot of video and pictures, which I usually take a ton. And I was taking some, but it just seemed like miles on this trip were just not being met. It was just like, we still haven't done a mile.
Yeah. They're just hard miles.
Yeah.
They're just hard miles. The Carlsbad Cavern section, just because the trail's so hard to follow, it's so overgrown. You're walking through cactus and cat claw. It's just slow going.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So I have a question. We're hiking. You know, we probably could have started a lot earlier, but because of parking cars and when McKittrick was going to open and stuff, you know, we probably got, we sorry, we started about hiking about 9:30 or so.
Mm-hmm.
So we shortly came to the realization that we are probably not going to make the 16 miles that we had slotted for day one. But we, at that moment, you know, it's starting to get dark. We haven't like officially said, okay, we're going to stop here or stop there. We just knew, yeah, you know, it's going to be tough to be able to make these 16 miles for the day. So my question to you is, would we always need to drop down to the Agua Dulce water tank, or could we have kept going on the GRT to a possible campsite?
Well, the GRT does drop down to Agua Dulce. That is, okay, that is the official route. But if you wanted to stay on the ridge, you could stay. That's 201. That's the 201. Mm-hmm. If you stayed up on the ridge on the 201, you could avoid dropping down to Agua Dulce altogether. Mm-hmm. That's a 1,000-foot elevation gain or elevation loss. And then there's another 1,000-foot elevation gain getting back up on the ridge.
Yeah.
If we had had the water, we could have done that, but we didn't have the water. It was time to drop down to Agua Dulce and refill.
Yep. So to the listeners, this was probably one of the neatest experiences. We're up at the ridge. It's dark. You know, we have our headlamps on, and Todd's like, all right, we're dropping down to the Agua Dulce.
Oh yeah. It wasn't dusk. It was dark.
Dark. Yes. And what was, okay, so at first it was neat, right? And if you know Guadalupe Mountains, this was exactly like us probably heading out to do El Cap Peak or one of the peaks for the quad, or you're up at Tejas and you just said, oh yeah, I'm just going to drop off the side and just start walking down. There's absolutely no trail. There's some trees that have a marker, so you know the direction. And Todd leaves me and I'm just thinking mountain lion. That's all I could think about. A mountain lion is going to come behind me and kill me. It's pitch black dark. Every once in a while, you'll see like a little sticker on a tree that you know you're going in the right direction. The slant of the mountain you're just bushwhacking down, it facilitates an image that you're just always going to be cliffed out, right? Like,
yeah,
it just, the way the shadows hit, it just looks like it's you're going and it's a cliff. You're going, it's a cliff.
And I really needed my trekking poles.
Yes. I did tell you could borrow one of mine. You never did.
You did.
Yep. So for me, Todd was way ahead of me. And usually you can't keep up with him going downhill, but I don't really know how to describe the experience. I'm thinking mountain lion, it's dark. Todd's way ahead of me. So like, I can't even see him anymore, 'cause he's dropped down even further. And it's just me, and man, I don't even know if I'm going the right way. There's no trail, there's cactus, there's loose rock. It is everything that you could imagine that you don't want was on this descent.
Yeah, the descent to Agua Dulce in the dark is 180 degrees opposed to what it's like doing it in the daytime. I think Joe, on his episode before, he talked about him and Kyle coming down to Agua Dulce in the dark and how hard it was to see the tanks. And, you know, we were told you could see the tanks, but you can't see them in the dark. And I finally got a taste of that. It is so much different in the dark than it is in the daytime.
And if you don't follow those stickers, you know, on the trees and hit in the right spot, you're not going to see the tanks. You're going to be behind them, or you're going to be way off to the side, and I could really see that would facilitate, especially if you're running out of water, some panic, because, you know, where are these tanks? And it's in the middle of pitch black dark. And that was the first thing that I thought of, that when, you know, Joe and Kyle were doing it, and, you know, Joe came on the podcast and was talking about it, that, yeah, that's really something that you have, that you need to have it marked on a map where these tanks are. So when you hit the bottom, you know, okay, do I walk up this little canyon or down the canyon to find these tanks?
I think the secret to finding the tanks, even in the dark, is to follow the pipe that you're following down the mountain. There's an iron pipe, and then there's a black PVC pipe, plastic pipe, and they go to the tanks. So if you don't have a GPS track, if you're having reservations about, am I going the right way, follow the pipes, they'll lead you to the tank. They might not lead you the shortest way, but they'll lead you to the tank.
So we get to the tanks. I'm so excited because this is the first time I get to drink from
cow water.
Yes. And so you walk to the back of the tank, and there's a pile of rocks.
Oh, hang on. Remember the trough. When we first, the first thing we saw was the open air trough.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That was full of moss and bugs.
Bugs.
Just cow slobber. Anything disgusting you could think of, that's where poor Jason's like, yay, we've got water. Oh, no, we've got water.
Well, yes. And I'm thinking, if I'm really going to test out my Sawyer filter.
He's going to make me drink out of this.
Uh-huh. And yeah, and that's right, because I walked up to it and was like, oh, man. And I think I was getting out my Sinox bag, and you're like, no, it's on the back side. Yeah. And so it's neat because you walk around the back, and this was the only tank out of all the ones we experienced that were like this. You walk around the back, there's a pile of rocks, and if you remove the rocks, it has a valve that you can open up. And I have a video of you know, the water coming out, and I'm collecting it. Very nice. So if you're a hiker and you experience the Agua Dulce tank, please remember to put the rocks back, because, you know, the ranchers were nice enough to have something like that for the hikers. And they put the rocks there so the cows don't step and break the valve. So that was really cool. We filled up that stuff. My filter didn't work like crap. I was really upset. Todd's filter worked amazing. It was going so fast. I was even thinking, like, I wonder if he has a hole in it.
Oh yeah. This is the one that's already frozen.
Yeah. This is the one that froze and ripped. No, but it was neat. It was, you know, you're out there, you, it was my first tank, first time to get water. So it was a wonderful experience for me. At that moment, we had a discussion. So it was probably, what, about 7, 8 o'clock at night?
At least 8, maybe even 8:30.
Yeah. And okay, what do we do? Do we continue to try to make up the 4 miles, you know, to camp, to the planned camp? Or do we camp there, meaning that we have 4 additional miles to make up the next day? And I think, and Todd, also, you know, jump in here, you know, our decision was to cut the hike there. Mm-hmm. And then because the next day wasn't going to be as difficult as what we've just experienced with the Slaughter Canyon, that we thought, yeah, we definitely could make up. If we had an early start, we definitely could make up the 4 miles. And that would make our day 2, you know, around 19, 20 miles that, you know, that we would need to do. And so we decided that, yep, let's cut it here, get a good night's sleep and start early in the morning. The funny part of that is we walked to the back. So the backside of the tank where the valve was, that side of the tank, we kept walking behind the tank, and there was an area, maybe behind the tank and a little bit north, there was an area where we found to camp. But as you would guess, we are at a cow tank, cow water, cow lay down, tons of cows.
The cow conference area.
Yeah, the cow conference area, like the water cooler at work. There was tons of cow leftover cow poop, and we had to walk around the area and find where we would be able to lay our tents out and not hit cow poop.
In defense of the cows, there was very little fresh poop. Most of it was old and dry, and you could just kick it out of the way. I have no problem camping in that spot. It's the flattest spot you're going to find for several. Well, I thought it was the flattest spot you could find for several miles. We found out different the next day, but, it's right there by the water. It's flat. It's not that cow encrusted. Maybe just cause I grew up on a farm. I'm not shy about being near cow poop. But it's not as bad as some people have made it out to be.
The only words I could say when we were walking around there, I was like, oh, shit. And, you know, it's funny. I made a post about that, and Cameron chimed in and said, he goes, that's why I use a hammock out there.
A hammock's not a bad idea. You know, if you don't want to lay down where the cow crap was, because like I say, you can kick it out of the way. A hammock could get you up off of it.
Yep, definitely. All right, so the wrap up to day 1, Slaughter Canyon absolutely killed us. It was tough.
Really, really cool geography, though.
Yep, it was nice to have done it, so now we know what to expect on our next attempt.
We saw those people that were going caving, which was pretty cool.
Yep, and we, like, day 1 at night, I didn't have dinner. I just went to bed and had, you know, I had some trying to catch up with my hydration, and then went to bed and just knew day 2 was going to bring lots of miles and hopefully won't be as hard as day 1 was. What was your kind of recap of day 1?
Made sure to rehydrate. I know I don't drink nearly enough water while I'm hiking. I mean, that's a problem I'm very well aware of. So I've gorged myself on water, had a Mountain House buffalo chicken mac and cheese for dinner, and slept like a rock.
And you had a midnight snack, I heard.
Yeah, yes, I did. I did have a midnight snack. I was trying to be quiet, but I heard, you eating that trail mix over there?
Yeah, it's probably like 1 or 2 in the morning. I hear this little bag kind of undo, and then I hear, like, you know, a hand going into some trail mix, and then, you know, some crunching, and so I called him out on it. All right, day 2. Lead us.
Day two, we start off the day going into some unexplored territory. I knew that the next 4 miles, maybe even only three. I knew it was there, but I had never done it before. It's all two-track Jeep road. And we got up early. We started walking early. We had plenty of water, so we were in no rush. We knew that we had water cached in about 4 miles. Walking through the canyons, I told Ben the week before, I said, I hope Jason likes walking on two track, because some people are spoiled to single track. Some people get turned off by a double track, but the canyons and the cliffs on either side, I think, was really worth it. But we wound around through Cottonwood Canyon and some of the other canyons, and surprise, surprise, we found two campsites that I did not even know existed, that if we had kept going another mile the night before, we could have camped right beside another cattle tank full of water on a nice flat surface with a rock fire ring already built for us. Just a really, really cool couple of campsites we passed on the way.
Yeah, and one was right at a rock ledge that mm-hmm. was that we could camp up against. That, I mean, it was absolutely spectacular.
Yeah, a couple of really, really cool spots. I marked them on my map for future reference. But I think that morning was a really nice walk. It was the sun hadn't got up and started burning us yet. We were down in the canyon, so we had a little bit of shade. Found a couple of nice places to camp, and we got to the original planned campsite pretty early. Water was still there, and I really wish we had been able to make it to there, but you know, hindsight's 2020, and Slaughter Canyon slowed me down quite a bit, and we did start a little bit late, so I'm gonna fall back on that. We started too late.
Yeah. So for me, day two, you know, I think I woke up probably about 4 a.m. Felt good. Wasn't sore as I would have expected. Usually my back is a little sore, especially on big water carries. And we were carrying, 4 to 5 liters. Yeah. I knew in 4 miles we would have a cache. So I think I still had a little over half a liter left from what we carried in, as well as what we got from Agua Dulce. So, you know, I felt good. I wasn't worrying about water, and, it was going to be a light carry up until we get to the caches. But yeah, I felt good. Like Todd said, it was cool in the mornings, not cold. So, you know, definitely would be able to bang out some miles, and was pretty excited about the day, and you know, knowing that we still had the 4 miles to make up, so it would have made our day, you know, around 20 miles, but we ended up clocking 21, and we'll get into that a little bit later. But yeah, so I think, you know, we renamed the GRT, the GRR, because a lot of it, where there was no trail. And, yeah, we started, and, at that moment, when we started, I had no worries, felt great, and was ready for the day.
Yeah. You said it. I mean, the day started out perfect. And the day wasn't bad. It was just hot.
Yeah. And I don't remember too much shade. I know there was some shade, but not too much shade. And I believe this was the day, so we walked from Agua Dulce, found a few new cattle tanks, we found some new campsites, and then we had to climb out of, or climb up to the GRT for a second time.
Correct.
And I think that's where
the pain started.
Yeah.
Like I say, we got to the proposed camp, the planned camp for night one, filled up our water, everything's good. Then we had that little short road walk on Forest Service 412, which is only about we only did like half a mile. Got to the Cave Canyon trailhead, stopped and took a break there under some trees, had a little snack. Everything's looking well and good. And we start walking, and I looked right at the sign that said Trail 210 and started going up it.
And what was funny is before that you said, okay, we're going to see, I think it was, what is it?
222.
210 and 222. We want to take 222. We hiked right to 210. You saw it. I saw it. And we just kept going.
it looked familiar, but it looked familiar because that's the way you come down. If you're following the official GRT route, that's the way you come from Agua Dulce. So I'm walking through, looking at the creek, and I'm like, yeah, this is the right way. Yeah. And, oh, I don't know, what was it, about a quarter of a mile, three-tenths of a mile in, I'm like, we should be going up already. This isn't right. So pulled out I took us the wrong way. So here's an extra half mile of bonus miles.
Yep. That officially made us 21.
Yeah. I wanted to get that 21 for the day. But yeah, just walked right past the sign, looked at it, and didn't read it.
Yeah. And I think what I remember most about this day, so this was from Agua Dulce to almost the Texas-New Mexico border, right? So it was, if you know the Guadalupe Mountains, it was right before you hit the Permian Reef Trail. What was neat is, you know, you can start to see the Guads in the distance.
Mm-hmm.
You see, I mean, it's probably, I don't know how many miles away, but, you know, way off in the distance, you see a fire tower or lookout tower, and you know that's the direction that you're going. And, you know, for me, and especially being in Texas, we don't stumble across lookout or fire towers too often. So it was exciting to walk along the trail and start to see that, you know, the closer and closer you get to these landmarks. So that was pretty exciting. We got to the fire tower. There's a cabin there, and we had a really good shaded rest. I climbed up the fire tower, but you know, you can't go in it, or the lookout tower.
Before we got to the tower, we had a couple of other memorable experiences, I would say. There was the new water tanks that were installed along Trail 222. I knew there was a metal tank there that has always been empty, but we came across two brand new 4,500-gallon tanks that were full. They had a nice, clean trough behind them where Jason was able to dunk his buff in the water and cool his head off.
It was orgasmic, if you see my videos.
The tanks are sitting on some big fiberglass sheets on the ground, so there was a nice, flat, clean place to lie down in the shade to take a break.
Yep.
That was really nice. We took a prolonged break there.
Well, yeah, we didn't want to leave.
Did not want to leave. But then we kept going, and as we're coming around a corner in the distance, I can see a side-by-side sitting on the trail.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about them.
Yeah, so as we're getting closer, I'm starting to think, man, I hope these guys aren't jerks. Because they're out here to hunt. They're not out here to walk. They're out here with a set goal of to be quiet, sneak up on an animal, you know, and hunt. We got up to them. You know, I'm trying to break the ice. I'm like, man, I didn't know my Uber would come out this far. And it was a father and son, and they laughed, and turned out mom was there too. They gave us some cold water, some cold Gatorade, some cookies. Gosh, we sat there for what, 30 minutes, 45 minutes, just talking to them, laying in the shade. They were from Silver City, New Mexico. And they were there doing some Barbary sheep hunting. And super, super cool people. Some real live trail magic on the GRT.
The amount of snacks they were trying to give us, Gatorades, waters. I think you had a Gatorade and a water, and I had a couple of bottles of water. But that was spectacular.
Well, and the response you get when you tell them, well, we're hiking 100 miles, and we've already done 25 or however much it was at that time, and you know we got a 20 mile day today, and just the look. You know, they're just incredulous. You're walking how far? I live for that response. I love it when people
in this heat.
Oh yeah, they're just blown away.
And also what's kind of cool is the way we feel about hiking and backpacking, the love that we have. They had that, you could tell that kind of love for hunting. And you could tell when you're talking about the guns they were using and the ammo, man, that they just lit up. And
when you asked him what they were hunting with, his eyes lit up and he was like, well, we got this shell and it's got such and such grain and da, 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 da. And, you know, we've got a range finder that tells you down to the foot how far away the target is. I mean, his eyes lit up. And then when we started talking about hiking, he was like, I can see it in your eyes that that's what you're passionate about.
Yeah.
It was so cool to see somebody that was as passionate about their hobby as we are with ours.
Yeah, absolutely. And that was right before we got to the fire towers.
Yeah, that was not even a mile from the fire tower.
Yeah, I forgot about that. And actually, when I hiked up on the fire tower, you know, they had left us and you could see them off in the distance, you know, with their binoculars still, you know, even though they were heading out, they were still trying to locate one of those. Yeah, for sure. So we had, that was a back-to-back break. We had a break with them when we were sitting there talking in the nice shade with all the snacks and the water and Gatorade.
Cold drinks.
Yep. And then we made it to the fire tower. Yeah, like you said, not even a mile, and we had another long break.
Yep.
And so I think when we left the fire tower, we were feeling good.
Oh, yeah.
I was sugared up. I was hydrated up. And I just remember, those are a couple things I remember before we hit camp, was you kept talking about FU Mountain and that it was coming up. And also there was a section and it was almost like we were in the Gladiator movie. The sun was coming down behind the mountain and it was almost like we were in a wheat field. And, you know, the sun's hitting the tops of this wheat and they were like literally glowing. And I have a really amazing video of it as I'm walking through it. And you were, you know, ahead of us where you're walking through. And so it's showing you kind of go through this area. It was spectacular. One of the most spectacular.
Well, that was the next morning. After we had crossed into Texas and were going along the rim, going towards the Permian Reef Trail. Because all of the walking we did on that second day was two-track, except for that last mile to camp. And that last mile to camp was in the dark. But I know where you're talking about, because I was channeling my Maximus Decimus Meridius from Gladiator.
Maybe it was.
But yeah, it was stunning. It was stunning. The way the morning sun was hitting it, it looked like a wheat field.
So day two, we made it.
Yeah, we left the fire tower. We're refreshed. We've got some sugar in us. We've got some cold drinks in us. I think by then we realized we're going to be walking in the dark again. No big deal. It's on a two-track. We're not going to be getting lost. We're walking down the road in the dark. And that's what we did. We just walked until we got to the 540 turnaround, If anybody's familiar with the Guads, they know where Forest Service Road 540 ends. There's a big gravel turnaround spot. We got there right before the sun went down and took a little break, you know, 10-minute break, and then put on our headlamps and started walking. And I told you I wanted to get you to North McKittrick before the sun went down, because I wanted you to be able to see that walk along North McKittrick. But alas, we got there, it was already dark. We took a break and we were able to count the satellites going overhead. It was so black. And we just kept walking down until we got to camp.
And this is towards the end, you know, when we were, two more miles, three more miles. This is when I started really starting to, I wouldn't say struggle, but like going, oh my God, like really a mile takes this long? Like I was really getting frustrated. I just wanted to get there and set up camp and go to sleep.
Every hill, no matter how short it was, felt like Mount Everest. You know, yep. I'm tired. I've been walking all day. I'm hot. I'm sweaty. I just want to be there.
Yeah.
But, you know, we made it. The same trail that I had hiked the week before that had snow and ice on it was now bone dry. And we got to camp. The water that I had cached there the week before was still there. And we set up. And I think it was a pretty good campsite.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, like, I wasn't too tired, so I cooked dinner, dehydrated meal, and even at there, I was tired, ready for camp, but definitely at that moment, you know, was still feeling good and excited about the trip.
Yeah, it was just the exhaustion of being so hot all day was, you know, taking a toll, I think, on both of us, but I think both of us were still feeling good about the trip. I mean, the trip has been fun. We've been making big miles. You know, that's, hey, we can brag about this. We just did a 21-mile day in the Guads. Camp was good. So far, and now we're caught back up to schedule. We're at the planned night two camp on night two. So we're trucking right along.
So now day three comes around, and this is what I had originally thought would be the hardest day. And when we got up in the morning, I was hoping that this would not be the hardest day, because the last 2 days have been pretty tough. But we got a very early start.
Good and early start. Yes.
Yeah. It was 5 a.m. when we started?
We were walking before the sun. Yeah. Before the sun was over the horizon, we were already walking.
Yeah. But yeah, so today we were going to walk the 0.2 mile into Texas, hit the Permian Reef Trail, go down to the Permian Reef Trail to McKittrick Trailhead. Then we were going to move cars. So we were going to take both our cars to Pine Springs and then bring one car back to McKittrick Trailhead and then start from McKittrick Trailhead up McKittrick Canyon to McKittrick Ridge campsite. And then that would be day three night. And then also, you know, we had access to our cars, so we were only carrying, you know, a little over 2 days worth of food.
Right.
So like Todd said earlier, throw away some stuff, refill with water, resupply with any food or anything that we needed, and then, you know, start day three.
And it started off great. I mean, I don't remember the Permian Reef Trail being so long. And I don't know if that's because I was just so tired, but from the state line over to where the trail starts dropping down, it took forever to get there. And it wasn't that it was hard hiking. It was just, oh my gosh, how far is this?
Yep. we're not there yet. Yeah, we're not right. on the way down yet. And this was another day where I was getting frustrated about how long a mile took. And it, you know, being up there, it's flat. And, you know, you would assume that, you know, we're walking at a good pace. But yeah, it was, I started getting frustrated that, come on now, we're not heading down yet. So yeah, I was getting a bit frustrated.
Well, and we're both familiar with that trail, so we know how long it should take.
Yeah.
But I would stop and look back, you know, cause you were a little bit behind me. And I'd look at my watch and I think, man, we've been walking for, it feels like 2 hours now. And we've only, there's no way. How did they stretch this little 2 mile piece of trail out to be so long?
Yeah. It must've been because of the videos I was taking of the sun hitting the wheat, the little, I don't know what plant that is, but it was looked pretty spectacular. And yeah, so we get to McKittrick Trailhead, and this is where the hike went off the rails for me. So we get to McKittrick, and then we sit there, we rest at the trailhead, then we get into our cars. It's hot as heck. We turn on the AC. You have to go to White's to get gas because, you know, we're, you know, you definitely don't want to run out of gas out there.
Yeah,
and,
we're going to be shuttling back and forth Pine Springs to here, Pine Springs to there. I better go get some gas.
Yep. So you went to get gas. So that's, I don't know, about 25-minute drive there and back. I drove to Pine Springs and went into the visitor center and got a couple of Powerades and was sitting there in the visitor center talking to the Rangers. And I think that's where mentally I started going, what in the hell am I doing out here? Like, I could be in AC, I could be at a hotel. I mean, just all this stuff started running in my mind. And it was all facilitated about how hot it was out there.
Yeah.
And then I start thinking, okay, we're heading to Dog Canyon today and tomorrow, or in that direction. There's absolutely no shade for the majority of that heading to Marcus. And then from Marcus, you know, around Bush, it's you're out there. There's no water at Dog Canyon. We do have some caches. I just started playing through all this stuff, how hot it is. And I think that's the downfall for me. If we would have never had to move cars and never got off trail, I think we would have finished it.
I think it hit me when we drove back to McKittrick and we're walking from McKittrick to Pratt Cabin. And that's an easy walk. You know, it's basically flat. But the sun reflecting off of that white stone and the sun beating down on my head, I just, man, this is hot. I'm carrying 4 liters of water, and I've already gone through half of a liter just on this little 2 mile stretch right here. I think in the back of my mind, I started thinking, I don't know. I don't know about this. And then when we got to Pratt and we took a break there on the front porch, you know, pulled up some rocking chairs. And I think we were both kind of thinking, I don't want to be the one to say it, but I don't know about this. And I think that heat, you know, I think we made the right call.
Absolutely.
You know, I wasn't looking forward to the climb up McKittrick Trail in the heat, carrying 4 liters of water. You know, that's the toughest hike in the park. We would have got there around sundown, but then the next day we're going to go down Tejas in the sun. We're going to go up Bush in the sun. We're going to be sitting at Marcus, you know, very aware of how much water we've got left for the next day. The next day, We're going to have to go all the way up Marcus Trail, which has zero shade.
Yep.
You know, I'm starting to go over in my head, you know, well, what if we cut off some miles right here? What if we cut off some miles right here? And by that point, it was like, if Jason wants to bail, I'm ready to bail. And I think that's...
Yeah, I think that was the first thing, is we cut off the miles. So we said, look, we have water cached at Tejas.
Yep.
So let's just go from McKittrick to Tejas and then Pine Springs.
Yeah, instead of cutting down to Dog Canyon, let's just cut this part of the loop off, or this loop that goes down by Dog Canyon. Let's cut that off and just go straight down to Tejas.
And yeah, and then that was a discussion that we had on the front porch. And then I'm thinking about that. And then I think I looked at you and go, you know what? I'm just done. And that wraps up another exciting episode of the Trailblazing Texas podcast. We hope you enjoyed the episode today, and stay tuned for our next episode, where we will pick back up where we left off and guarantee to uncover many more hiking gems and share many more tips to enhance your experience on the trail. Until then, happy trails and happy hiking.